Look around at the physical world for a second. It's actually astonishing how much of our modern infrastructure relies entirely on a single, seemingly impossible trick.
Right, shaping solid metal without actually breaking it.
Exactly. I mean, think about the sleek, aerodynamic curve of an airplane fuselage, or consider the massive sweeping suspension cables on a bridge.
Oh, or even something as simple as the sturdy metal frame of the office chair you might be sitting in right now.
Yeah, exactly. None of that is carved from a solid block of material. It's all bent.
It really is everywhere once you start looking for it. I mean, pipelines, electrical enclosures, the chassis of your car.
The agricultural silos you see on a road trip.
Yeah, those two. Our entire built environment is fundamentally reliant on this ability to coax rigid, unforgiving metal into highly specific structural shapes. And load-bearing ones at that.
And that is the exact premise of our custom-tailored deep dive for you today. We're pulling from a really comprehensive industry source. It's titled Industrial Metal Bending: Equipment, Mechanics, and Selection Guide.
It is a fantastic guide.
It really is. And the mission here is to shortcut you to being incredibly well-informed about all this hidden engineering that's just, all around us.
Demystifying the billions of dollars of industrial equipment that actually make the modern world possible.
Exactly. We are taking a close look at the physics, the mass of machines, and frankly, the very real physical dangers of manipulating steel.
So, okay, let's unpack this, because
Yeah.
the core physics of metal bending all comes down to a fundamental concept called controlled plastic deformation.
Right. And to really understand controlled plastic deformation, you have to look at how metal behaves under stress.
Okay.
When a massive industrial machine applies force to a piece of steel or, aluminum, it pushes that material through different states. So initially, the metal is in an elastic state.
Meaning it flexes. Yes, exactly. It will bend, but if you remove the force, it snaps right back to its original shape.
Like a diving board.
Great example, yeah. But to make a permanent change, the machine has to push the metal past what we call the yield point.
Which is the exact threshold where the metal stops merely flexing elastically and actually starts to permanently restructure its internal geometry.
Exactly.
But surely it's not as simple as just hitting an angle and stopping,
Yeah.
because the metal actively fights back.
Oh, it absolutely does. That is like the central headache of the entire fabrication industry. Even after you force it past the yield point into that plastic state, the metal still retains a mechanical memory of its original shape. So when the machine releases its pressure, the material tries to bounce back slightly.
The dreaded spring back.
The dreaded spring back, yeah.
It's like if you take a thick, stubborn plastic ruler and try to bend it with your hands, you push it and it fights back against your fingers.
Right, it pushes against you.
Yeah. And if you want that ruler to permanently sit at a 90-degree angle, you cannot just bend it to 90 degrees.
No, because it'll just open back up.
Right. You have to overbend it to, say, I don't know, 93 degrees. That way, when you let go and it inevitably springs back, it settles flawlessly at 90.
That analogy captures the exact dynamic at play perfectly. Predicting that precise amount of spring back is an enormously complex calculation.
As it changes, right?
Oh, constantly. It changes based on the specific alloy, the thickness of the sheet, the ambient temperature, and, the radius of the bend itself.
Wow. So figuring out how to conquer that physics problem has basically been a centuries-long technological arms race.
What's fascinating here is that solving the problem of consistent bending is what actually unlocked the Industrial Revolution.
Wait, really? How so?
Well, if you look at the historical context, in the Bronze Age and early ironworking periods, blacksmiths were just using hammers, anvils, heat, and raw physical force.
Just beating the metal into submission.
Pretty much. But the results were wildly inconsistent. I mean, you cannot build a pressurized steam engine or a complex modern machine with hand-hammered parts.
Right, because if your metal is thicker in some spots and thinner in others, your yield point just fluctuates everywhere.
Exactly. Your spring back becomes mathematically unpredictable across the exact same piece of metal.
And that is exactly why the first major breakthrough in bending wasn't actually a bending machine at all, was it?
No, it wasn't. It was John Wilkinson's reversing rolling mill in the late 18th century.
Right.
He mechanized the production of the sheet metal itself. By finally rolling out sheet metal with a perfectly consistent thickness, engineers could actually predict how the material would behave under stress.
And from there, the evolution of the machinery really accelerates. I mean, the sources note that by 1875, workshops started seeing the first folding benches.
Yeah, those were a huge deal. They used mechanical leverage to multiply human strength, saving operators from relying on, you know, pure hand forming.
But the real leap in sheer brawn came later, right? In the late 1800s.
Yes, with the introduction of hydraulic cylinders, fluid dynamics just changed the game entirely.
Because you suddenly have all this fluid power.
Right. Hydraulic power allowed us to scale up from bending thin sheets to forming, like, inch-thick steel plates for ship hulls. It provided massive, sustained, and even pressure without human fatigue.
And then, jumping to the 1980s and 90s, the CNC press brake arrived.
Yes, introducing microprocessors to control that immense hydraulic force with pinpoint digital accuracy.
Which brings us to the actual mechanics of the bend today. Because pushing solid metal past its yield point using thousands of pounds of hydraulic force sounds, frankly, really violent.
It is incredibly violent on a microscopic level.
Right. But what happens when the metal isn't a solid sheet? I mean, if I try to bend a hollow metal exhaust pipe, why doesn't it just crumple and flatten out like a crushed soda can?
That is the multi-million dollar question for the aerospace and automotive industries.
Because they use so much hollow tubing.
Exactly. If you apply force to a hollow tube without the right internal support, the outside wall thins out until it snaps, and the inside wall collapses inward.
Total soda can scenario.
Yeah. So to prevent that, the industry uses a highly specific mechanical setup called rotary draw tube bending.
Okay.
And the most critical component isn't even visible from the outside. It's called the mandrel.
Right. The mandrel goes inside the tube.
It does. A mandrel is this solid tool, often articulated like a metal snake so it can flex, that is inserted directly into the hollow core of the tube.
Oh, wow. Like a snake.
Yeah. And it sits precisely at the point where the bend is happening. It physically blocks the tube from collapsing, ovaling, or flattening out.
And then they just pull it out when they're done.
Exactly. It's withdrawn after the bend is complete.
So the machine's external frame could be the strongest, you know, most expensive piece of equipment in the world, but if that internal mandrel is sized incorrectly, you just crush the part.
The tooling is everything. It really is. In rotary draw bending, the tube is clamped and pulled around a bend tie.
And the bend tie dictates the centerline radius, right?
Yes, it does.
Just so we are clear for you listening, the centerline radius is basically how tight or sweeping the curve is, measured from the absolute center of the hollow tube.
Right. It determines the entire geometry of the curve. And to pull the tube around that bend die without it just slipping out of the machine, you use a clamp die.
Okay, so it grips it.
Tightly, which is absolutely crucial if you are working with strong or highly polished materials like stainless steel.
Because they naturally want to slide around under all that pressure.
Exactly. And while the machine is pulling, you also have the pressure die.
Okay, what does that one do?
The pressure die sits against the straight section of the tube, trailing just behind the bend. It acts like a steady guiding hand.
So it's applying constant contact pressure.
Yes. So the tube feeds smoothly into the curve rather than dragging, distorting, or, you know, buckling outward.
That is wild. But there's one more piece of tooling, and I think this is the most clever one, honestly. The wiper die.
Oh, the wiper die is essential.
Right, because when you bend a tube, the outside of the curve is being stretched, but the inside of the curve is being compressed.
Yes, and the metal on the inside has nowhere to go.
Right, so it naturally wants to bunch up and wrinkle. And the sources note that the wiper die sits right at the tangent point of the bend.
Which is the exact millimeter where the straight tube transitions into the curve. It's the danger zone.
The danger zone. Oh, yeah. And the wiper die physically blocks those wrinkles from forming in that compression zone.
It does.
Wait, though. If you have a massive metal block physically preventing steel from wrinkling under tons of pressure, wouldn't the sheer friction just tear the surface of the metal apart?
It absolutely would, and that introduces a critical element of the process, which is specialized lubrication.
Ah, so you grease it up.
But you cannot just use standard oil.
Yep.
Operators have to use specific heavy-duty drawing compounds.
Okay.
This lubrication creates a micro-barrier between the wiper die and the tube, allowing the metal to slide and compress without galling or tearing itself to shreds.
Wow, so that interplay of immense pressure and microscopic lubrication is literally the difference between a high-performance aerospace exhaust tube that efficiently channels jet gases and a piece of crumpled scrap metal.
Yes, exactly.
So internal support and specialized dies solve the hollow tube problem.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you cannot shove a mandrel into a flat sheet of steel.
No, you definitely cannot.
When the geometry of the raw material changes, the physics and the machines, well, they have to completely change. Here's where it gets really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're not just talking about one big hammer anymore. The sources detail entirely different categories of industrial machines, and they are best understood by the specific engineering problems they solve.
The diversity of these machines is incredible. Let's look at the challenge of creating sharp, straight angles in flat sheet metal.
Okay, so like a metal box.
Right. The industry standard for this is the press brake. It is a vertical force machine that presses an upper punch down into a lower V-shaped die.
So it literally just stamps a V into the metal.
Essentially, yeah. It's the absolute workhorse for creating electrical enclosures, brackets, and cabinets.
But if you are working with massive 10-foot sheets for, say, HVAC ductwork, you don't want an operator trying to balance this huge, heavy sheet and guide it down into a V-die. That sounds like a nightmare.
It is a nightmare, and it's dangerous. For that specific problem, you use a sheet metal bending machine, which is sometimes called a folding machine.
Okay, how is that different?
Well, instead of a punch pressing down from above, the sheet is clamped flat on a stationary workbench, and then a folding arm swings upward from below to bend the protruding edge.
Oh, I see.
It supports the weight of the material entirely, making it much safer and way more accurate for large, unwieldy panels.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, we already covered the challenge of hollow profiles with the pipe and tube benders. But how do we handle the challenge of continuous curves?
Right, because a press brake just gives you a localized sharp angle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if you are building a massive agricultural silo or, you know, a pressure vessel for an oil refinery, you need a continuous sweeping cylinder.
That requires the pleat rolling machine. This shifts away from punches and V-dies entirely.
No punches at all.
None. A plate rolling machine feeds a thick flat plate through a system of 3 or 4 heavy offset rollers.
Wait, I mean, how does that actually force the metal into a perfect circle?
The mechanism is actually quite elegant. The top roller presses down directly between the two bottom rollers.
Okay.
Because the thick metal plate is forced to span the physical gap between those bottom rollers while being subjected to immense downward pressure from above, it has no choice.
No choice but to do what?
It has to stretch on its bottom surface and compress on its top surface. By adjusting the distance and angle between these rollers, the operator controls the severity of that stretching and compressing,
resulting in a continuous sweeping arc.
Exactly.
That makes total sense. Now, let's talk about the structural challenge. The profile or section bending machine.
Ah, the heavy lifters.
Right. This is designed for the heavy lifters of the construction world. I-beams, H-beams, channels.
Yep.
When we look at structural steel, like a standard I-beam, the entire geometry is designed specifically to resist bending.
That is its sole purpose in a building.
So how do you force a beam into an architectural arch without buckling the flanges that are literally built to stop you from doing exactly that?
Shop floors actually refer to this structural challenge as bending the easy way versus the hard way.
I love that.
If you bend an I-beam the easy way, like wrapping a belt around your waist, the flanges on the edge are highly prone to buckling under the compression.
And the hard way.
If you bend it the hard way, pushing against the deepest, thickest cross-section of the beam, the sheer resistance makes the beam want to twist entirely out of the machine.
Oh, wow. So how does the machine handle that?
The profile bender solves this by using specialized, deeply grooved, driven rolls. These rolls envelop the beam, applying massive centralized pressure while perfectly supporting the outer flanges so the load-bearing shape remains completely intact.
That is so clever. And the final challenge from the sources is all about speed, volume, and complex geometry.
Right, the automated systems.
The CNC wire bending machine completely bypasses flat sheets. It feeds raw wire straight from a massive coil, spinning and bending it in midair to create complex 3D shapes.
Like industrial springs or retail display racks.
Right, and it does it in a matter of seconds.
Yep.
And similarly, the automated panel bender uses a series of robotic blades to make rapid, complex folds on high-volume architectural facade panels.
All without a human ever having to reposition the sheet.
And that pivot toward automated blades and mid-air robotic bending highlights where the entire multi-billion-dollar industry is currently heading, doesn't it?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it really does.
Yeah, because if you're wondering why a massive market is completely restructuring itself, well, the automated vending equipment market was valued at $2.17 billion in 2022.
A huge number.
And the projections in our sources expect it to hit $3.37 billion by 2032. It really comes down to a battle between brute force and digital brains on the fabrication floor.
That is a staggering amount of capital flowing specifically into automation. To understand why that money is moving, we have to look at the great debate of modern fabrication.
Hydraulic systems versus CNC.
Exactly. Hydraulic versus computer numerical control. Hydraulics represent the traditional brawn of the operation.
Because they use pressurized fluid power to drive the punch.
Yes. They offer phenomenal raw force, they handle a wide variety of different materials beautifully, and they have a much lower upfront capital cost.
So they're great for smaller shops.
Very practical. Mm-hmm. If you are running a custom low-volume job shop where you might bend a piece of copper pipe in the morning and a thick steel bracket in the afternoon, a hydraulic machine is great.
What?
But it requires a skilled operator to manually set the mechanical stops, calculate the bending angles, and physically measure and adjust for spring back on every single new part through trial and error.
Which, I mean, takes a massive amount of time. It relies entirely on the nuanced skill of the human operator and produces a lot of scrap metal while you dial in the settings.
Exactly. Contrast that with CNC, the brains of the operation.
Okay, how does CNC change things?
CNC systems use digital automation, motorized precision axes, and advanced sensor technology. They have a significantly higher initial cost, but it is a total game changer for high volume manufacturing.
Because of how it handles that spring back problem we talked about earlier.
Yes.
Well, wait, how does the computer actually compensate for the metal fighting back without a human manually measuring it?
Modern CNC machines use an array of sensors, sometimes even real-time lasers, to measure the angle of the metal as it is actively being bent.
Oh, real-time lasers.
Yeah. The computer detects the material's resistance, cross-references that data with an onboard digital library of material behaviors, and calculates the exact springback coefficient in milliseconds.
That is unreal.
So if you run a batch of stiff carbon steel parts and then switch the machine over to softer aluminum, you don't have to spend 2 hours doing trial and error test bends.
Because the sensors detect the change in the yield point.
Yes. And the computer automatically adjusts the punch depth to overbend the aluminum just enough so it springs back to the perfect angle.
That is incredible. I mean, it drastically reduces the scrap rate, and it solves the industry-wide demand for tighter repeatability.
Right. When an automotive plant needs 10,000 identical suspension brackets, they cannot afford human fatigue causing an error on bend number 4,000.
The digital brains guarantee that the first part and the 10,000th part are mathematically identical.
And this brings us to the practical application for you, the listener. Let's say you are tasked with outfitting a new fabrication facility.
Or maybe you're just curious how procurement works for a multi-million dollar industrial shop.
Right. How do you actually buy one of these machines without making a catastrophic financial mistake?
Well, the sources are extremely clear on the golden rule of procurement here. You must start with the part, not the catalog.
It is the most common pitfall. Buyers look at the shiny machines with the most digital features, but you have to meticulously define the physical limits of what you actually intend to produce first.
Like what?
Like, what is the absolute thickest material you will ever process? What is the longest single bend you need to make? What is the tightest, smallest radius required?
You essentially have to size the machine and its maximum tonnage for the absolute worst, most difficult, realistic job you will ever face.
Exactly. If you buy a cheaper, lighter sheet bender and try to force heavy steel plate through it, the machine's steel frame will literally deflect and bend under the strain.
You lose all your angle control and potentially destroy your expensive tooling.
And we also have to address the human element here, because we're dealing with immense physical forces that can easily crush steel.
Yeah, safety is a massive issue.
Safety is not just a secondary concern. It dictates how these machines are operated. OSHA heavily monitors these environments. The most obvious hazards are the pinch points.
Right, the physical area where the punch meets the die.
Yes. Operators use presence sensing laser guards to ensure their hands are totally clear before the machine engages.
But the sources highlight a much less obvious, incredibly dangerous hazard, which is the swing of the metal itself.
Oh, the swing, yes.
I mean, if you are bending a massive 10-foot-long sheet of steel in a press break, you insert one edge into the machine, but the rest of the sheet is sticking out toward you.
Right.
When the punch comes down and creates the bend, that entire protruding piece of heavy metal swings forcefully upward to form the angle.
And if an operator is leaning over the material or standing too close to the machine's front edge, that swinging sheet acts like a giant metal lever striking them with thousands of pounds of force.
Wow.
Safe physical positioning is just as critical as any digital laser guard.
I also thought of a machine maintenance as just keeping the equipment running and you know, avoiding breakdowns. But the sources imply it's actually an active variable in the physics of the bend itself.
It absolutely is an active physics variable. Worn-out tooling causes severe product defects long before it causes a catastrophic machine breakdown.
How so?
Well, the maintenance guides mandate inspecting the bend dies for microscopic cracks before every single shift.
Wait, why do microscopic cracks matter so much if the massive machine is still applying the exact same tonnage?
Because a microscopic crack fundamentally alters the friction profile of the die.
I see.
That altered friction localized on the tool changes the metal's yield point as it drives across the surface. That creates unpredictable spring back and ruins the part.
So operators must also constantly lubricate the mandrels to prevent friction tears inside hollow tubes.
Yes. And check hydraulic fluid viscosity, recalibrate the CNC backstops, and religiously clear away the microscopic metal chips that accumulate in the dies.
So what does this all mean? It means the practical reality of running these machines on a shop floor is a constant, delicate balancing act.
Between immense destructive force and microscopic calculated precision.
It truly is a perfect synthesis of raw physics, material science, and digital control. We've covered a massive amount of ground today.
We really have.
We traced the journey from the ancient, wildly inconsistent hammers of Bronze Age blacksmiths to the game-changing standardization of Wilkinson's rolling mill.
All the way to modern multi-million-dollar CNC systems that use real-time lasers to fight the invisible forces of elastic springback.
Exactly. We've seen how different physical geometries demand completely different mechanical approaches.
From the articulated mandrels protecting hollow aerospace exhaust pipes to the massive offset rollers coaxing thick steel plates into continuous curves.
Ultimately, whether it is a sprawling suspension bridge, the fuselage of a commercial airliner, or a simple filing cabinet, our physical infrastructure all comes down to the mastery of controlled plastic deformation.
And this raises a profound question for the future of manufacturing, building on everything we've discussed about CNC sensors and springback compensation.
Oh, I like where this is going.
Right now, machines rely on programmed data and real-time angle adjustments to predict how metal will bounce back. But as artificial intelligence and advanced sensor technology evolve, we are rapidly approaching a new era.
What kind of era?
An era where a machine might predict a material's elastic recovery at a microscopic molecular level.
Oh, wow.
Adjusting its force dynamically as the internal grain structure of the metal shifts. Will we soon be able to flawlessly bend advanced composite materials and hyper-strong aerospace alloys that are currently thought to be completely physically unbendable?
That would be revolutionary.
If so, that single enhancement could entirely rewrite the structural rules of architectural and automotive design.
Now that is a wild thought to walk away with. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. The next time you are sitting in a sturdy office chair or, you know, looking out the window at the sleek, continuous curve of an airplane wing, take a second to look closely at that metal.
Think about the physics behind it.
You now know exactly the kind of physics, the precision tooling, and the centuries of engineering problem-solving it took to force that rigid, stubborn material into that perfect, permanent curve.